Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to issue 4 of Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Andrew Farmer, and with me, as always, is our illustrious co-host, Jedi Cole Houston.
Co-host yet again.
Yeah, we're going to go with co-host.
A co-host, okay.
I think you have with all of your, why don't you just give a quick list of your co-hosting duties.
Duties, or are you looking for my resume here?
You can give a quick resume. You can give the elevator speech.
I guess I started my co-hosting career on VaderCast and then later Amazing Comic Cast. In the meantime, I'd been a co-host of the Star Wars $1 auctions at AllCon and later a co-host of the opening ceremonies at AllCon, the closing ceremonies at AllCon,
so,
co-hosting on the United States of Geekdom, and now co-hosting with Andrew here on this show. I've done a lot of co-hosting, but I've also done a little bit of hosting as well as MC
sure.
of Strip, the Dallas Web Comic Expo.
Sure.
And I've hosted a variety, bewildering variety of game shows and talk shows as well.
And the reason I say that is because I've deemed you the co-host.
Okay.
And I say that because you transcend hosting duties. And I use that as a segue into our topic for today, which is religion and comics.
You did that, and I didn't even notice, which is not surprising for me. But I
brought that in under the radar.
You did, and you did that masterfully.
I am the master of the segue, the awful segue. So far in this run, which, you know, has been aptly titled Comic Shop Confessional, if I got that right. I hope I did.
Confidential, but this one is actually Comic Shop Confessional.
Confessional. We've done Why We Hate Fanboys, or at least why I do, and Cole kind of just let me have my rants on that one.
I think we shared some common ground there.
We did.
I wasn't just clenching my fists and steaming over here.
No, that's true. We did Sexuality in Comics last week with the help of Jasmine Wolf. We did Women in Comics. And now to continue this contentious run, we're going to do Religion in Comics.
You know, and what better way to start a series than just stir things up right up front?
Well, you know, and I was thinking about this. I'm writing a piece for the website, and I was thinking about this, and I'm like, I really wanted to get into why I wanted this to be the opening story arc. And really, it's because I really think that people have lost the enjoyment that comes from reading comics. They're so mired in what it means that they've lost the ability to just enjoy it. And I kind of wanted to bring that to the forefront, that not this doesn't really matter. You know, all this is out there, and there's a lot of hay being made, and it can be a lot of fun if used properly.
One of the things that this series or this arc is bringing to light is the fact that comics should be a lot of fun. And as the comic audience matures and as the recognized market for comics mature, at fits and starts, they're still pandering. They're still the writers, the editors and such. And, you know, for every bit of realism and grittiness that gets injected, there's always just a bit of old school kind of like, huh?
Yeah, I know.
That just don't work in the real world beyond, you know, the obvious.
Well, I mean, and here's the thing. This issue I went into, and I, you know, we try to research and look around and don't go just by what we have remembered from our vast
encyclopedic knowledge.
Yeah, knowledge of things. And I thought going into this was going to be a lame duck issue, because here's the thing, is if you look back through all the other topics we've done, there is no religious moment in comics like the North Star shaking his fist and saying, I'm gay.
Yeah,
you know, there's
no,
I'm Catholic.
Nobody's so, gone all dogma in comics.
No, they haven't. With the exception of, and I think we'll jump right into this because I think we'll start at the top of the mountain and work our way down. With the exception of Savage Dragon.
Oh my. You know, and the funny thing is, in putting together my research, my scant amount of research, that's the one thing that I know when you mention it that didn't cross my mind.
Exactly.
So yeah, if you're going to go to the top of the mountain, you may as well see God.
And he might as well be as offensive as humanly possible.
That's right.
For ratings.
And he may as well sucker punch the devil.
I mean, Eric Larson does to God what Eric Larson does to nudity and women and everything else that
and
he can think of.
Human sensibilities.
Exactly. Eric Larson is to comic books what Rob Liefeld is to comic books. No, I'm kidding.
Oh wow.
Yeah. No, I mean,
that's for blasphemy.
Whereas we all know how we all feel about Rob. Eric Larson does it as satire, you know, and I think that's the big differentiating factor between what he does and what some of the other artists do. But yeah, he had a thing, and that's the only one I can remember ever making any kind of news. Is the Eric Larson God Fights the Devil issue of Savage Dragon. And really, it only made the news because it was so over the top. You know, you have a lot of little things that are religious in comic books that never make the news because they're so small. And so, and nobody really cares, you know? And that's the thing, is religion is such a huge deal outside of the pages of a comic book, whereas things that are made such a huge deal in the pages of comic books are not such a big deal outside of. It seems like a weird dichotomous situation where, you know, you've got a whole, like we were talking, Cole and I were talking off camera, as it were, about the
off panel
about the we were having an aside about the Frank Miller and then Kevin Smith Daredevil story arcs where he is made painfully Catholic.
Yes, exactly. And you know, I believe it was Kevin Smith in an interview said that he thought it was brilliant that Frank Miller felt it was obvious that Matt Murdock would have to be Catholic.
Exactly.
To him, the character as he already existed spoke the psyche of a Catholic, a devout Catholic. And that's something that's very interesting because, you know, the religious affiliations of most of the characters are oftentimes assumed, or occasionally they'll have a relative who's a preacher or something. Well, but you don't usually see them like, okay, guys, I'd love to come fight Thanos, but it's a church day.
I got mass.
Pancake breakfast.
Yeah, and that's what I was just going to say. You see people going to church in comic books almost as often as you see them go to the bathroom in comic books. It rarely ever happens.
I think I can count on one finger the number of times I've seen a comic book character actually go to the bathroom.
Exactly.
And on one finger on the other hand, the number of times it's ever been mentioned.
Correct. And I mean, it's a very similar thing with organized religion in comic books. Unless a character is going to the bathroom to push a story forward, unless it's like Murtaugh in Lethal Weapon and he gets stuck on the toilet with a bomb in it, you're not going to see a character go. You're not going to see a character go to church unless it's to push a story forward. You rarely see a character go to a church in a comic book if it's not a funeral or a wedding, and rarely a wedding. Usually a funeral, because like most people get married on a rooftop of like the Baxter Building or Central Park or some crap like that, where it's
or
much more glamorous.
Mortal remains are lost forever in some other dimension.
Exactly, where it's much more glamorous to explode it than it is. But let's talk about some dignitaries. We've talked about Matt Murdock being Catholic and how it makes sense. You know, another one that makes sense in that same vein is one that again isn't touched on that much, but Frank Miller had a hand in, because apparently Frank Miller loves him some Catholics, and that's the Punisher.
Okay.
The Punisher is another Catholic that I don't know if Frank Miller had a direct hand in making him outed Catholic, but I imagine he had some small part in that because he does enjoy that.
Well, if nothing else, he certainly inspired others to probably start to look at injecting some of the religious background into the real life feel of a lot of these characters. And certainly Marvel has been famous pretty much from the outset of trying to make their characters as real life as possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's definitely true. I'm trying to think of – see, that's the thing, is I'm trying to think of anybody else that is a real standout as far as – you know, you have – as far as religion and comic book stories go, you have things like a lot of the Vertigo stuff and a lot of the – let's say Sin City had a very strong storyline that involved religion in it. V for Vendetta had a strong storyline that involved religion in it. But these aren't the story. These are pieces of a story that are going to show a lot of times religion equals corruption in comic books.
Going back really quickly to the Catholicism in comics, you know, Catholicism really has always been, to my way of thinking, the high-profile religion for entertainment. You know, would anyone have tuned into Father Dowling Mysteries if he was Episcopalian?
True.
As one television show mentioned in passing where a character was Episcopalian, he says it's like Catholicism with all of the pageantry and none of the guilt. But Catholicism, for all of its good and ill, is one of the most easily recognizable religions based on just the sheer volume of iconography that even non-Catholics recognize.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you see a guy in a collar, chances are he's either Catholic priest or Episcopalian priest, at least in this country.
Correct.
And you might not even recognize someone as being a minister if they're from another religion because they don't dress as overtly. And then, of course, the number two or the other key religion that's fairly obvious in entertainment is Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
Because more often, though, especially in film and television, if a character is Jewish and you want to broadcast that, you can either put a yarmulke on them or just dress them up in the full regalia and go the whole Hasidic Jew with the curls and the shawls and everything else about it, you know, all a snatch. But I think that's one of the reasons that you see when you find people who've taken the time to try to figure out who's who, where people, where fictional characters in comics, where their religious standing is, you see just a string of Catholic, 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 and then occasionally somebody else. Wolfsbane from The New Mutants is another good example of a devoutly Catholic character who constantly complained to her teammates, "Didn't blaspheme."
Well, I mean, what was Colossus?
You know, that's interesting, because I think it might have come up as he and Kitty Pryde's relationship became more intimate.
Because Kitty Pryde's Jewish.
Yeah.
Which I remember reading that in the comic book and being like, okay, really? All right. It just, you know, it didn't even have the effect on me. I guess it's because, and again, I guess it's because the outside world, you know, we are at this point used to, we don't have the same issues with seeing other religions or any religion.
Well, precisely. As we would. I think that the character from Batman Incorporated that was a practicing Muslim.
Nightrunner.
Nightrunner, yeah. Nightrunner made a bigger splash. Because you could introduce a mainstream character as Jewish, and nobody would bat an eye. Now,
correct.
If you suddenly said that Superman was converting to Judaism, that would make a splash, and you'd get some sales out of it. But if you had a mainstream character you established from the outset, they're Jewish, nobody would care. But if you establish even a minor character, that Batman is somehow endorsing Islam, then, you know, the problem is that you're inviting that lack of disconnect between Islam and fanatical Islamists.
Correct. Which we all know is not a...
Yeah, that the bulk, you know, the major part of those who devout Islamists are not crazy. You want to blow everybody up.
It's the same, you know, amount of devout Islamists that are crazy as the devout super turbo crazy, you know, super white supremacist
or
Christians,
even, you know, crazy cultists who convince a handful of people to kill themselves in the name of what they are telling them is God. And that was an interesting point that you bring up, the fact that it didn't bother you that Kitty was Jewish. And the thing about it is that she was Jewish often played a role, and it was one of the few times outside of Daredevil that a character's religion played a role.
I knew this was coming. I knew it was coming.
Yeah. Yeah, you knew it.
Tell the story. Tell it, because I love it.
Not in the least of which was juxtaposing her religious beliefs against those of the rank and file X-Men and sort of melding that into Gothic lore and even playing off of another character's complete lack of religious devotion. And that was when the X-Men fought Dracula.
That's right.
And, you know, crosses of any, you know, even makeshift crosses were being bandied about. And Wolverine attempted to make a cross with a couple of his claws, which had no effect. Because one of the neat things that, I'm guessing Chris Claremont wrote this, but I'm not certain.
Probably.
One of the neat things that the writer introduced into this site was the idea that the cross is only as good as your belief. So when
correct.
Wolverine tries to make a cross, because he was an atheist, at least back then, I don't know what he is now because they keep changing his background, story, origin, character, attitude, etc. Claws.
Claws, costume,
but as
group affiliation.
As he swats Wolverine away, that as a non-believer, the cross is completely meaningless insofar as its power. And when Kitty Pryde produces a proper cross that she's managed to obtain somewhere, it has no effect on him either. But when he grabs her around the neck and his palm is securely planted on her Star of David necklace, it burns him and he freaks out and has to leave or die.
Run away.
But the thing about it was, that was an interesting way to use the character's religion as part of a storyline.
Correct.
And it wasn't like, you know, in Wolfsbane's case, you know, her Catholicism was worn on her sleeve. And I'll grant you that there are people who wear their religion on their sleeve, but eventually it gets tiresome.
It does.
In
it
the
does.
Context of the story. There's only so many times you can see, did it blaspheme? And it just turns into, you know, every time you saw a Black Widow or Colossus going, Bushmoy.
Exactly, exactly. You're like, ugh.
Which, interestingly enough, in the context of this story, Bushmoy is actually my god.
Which also should be noted, another religious character in comics that their religion actually made a difference was Nightcrawler.
That's a good point, too. Yeah, Nightcrawler was another Catholic.
He was the easy Catholic. Nightcrawler, it was interesting. His religion was interesting because of the fact that, the reason that he became religious was because that's where he was accepted. You know, looking the way that he does. Correct. But, I mean, you know, beyond that, Nightcrawler became accepted. You know, he became religious. He believed in the religion to the point where he died essentially because of his belief that nobody should be killed because it's a mortal sin to kill somebody. And that's why he essentially died. So I believe that he's another important character.
Interesting enough, there's another comic that I bring up often on different shows.
Here we go.
I may surprise you. You may be dead on. You may be surprised. Top 10.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Ah, yeah. It was really good. Top 10 was, it's Alan Moore, and I can't remember who the artist team was. But what's interesting about Top 10, at least the ones that Alan Moore wrote, which is available in two volumes of trade paperback because they were annoying and split it into two parts, is that it takes place on a world, or basically the world is where every single person in this world has a superpower of some kind.
Yeah.
So in a superpowered world, who are your heroes? And that's your rank and file cops. So it's basically it was like cops on a super world. So while these guys had powers, well, so did everybody else.
Yeah.
But one of the interesting things was they had, for example, one of the characters, Peregrine, is devoutly Catholic, very deeply religious person, and her partner is a lesbian.
Okay.
And so there was some, slight tension that she had to, work through in that relationship because she could not abide her partner's sexuality, but at the same time, they were still partners. They still had to work together. But Catherine actually, I'd already had Peregrine in my notes, but Catherine brought up another character who was very interesting, speaking of religion in comics, was a Satanist character, King Peacock.
Okay.
Who openly worshipped Satan, and his power, at least his perception, or perhaps the reality of it, was that he talked to Satan, and therein he could basically find the weakness in his enemies.
Okay. Well, but you've got a lot of that that doesn't get a lot of... Here's the other interesting thing, is if in our real life there was a news story where... I don't care who. Name a celebrity says that he worships Satan on Twitter.
Jack Black.
Okay. Jack Black worships Satan on Twitter. You heard it here first. Every news cycle for 3 days would have a story about how Jack Black worships Satan on Twitter.
Yeah.
You've got
the cover of Newsweek would be Jack Black beheading a goat and saying, are you Satanist enough?
Exactly. But you've got a character in Marvel Comics by the name of the Son of Satan.
Who later would be downplayed to simply Hellstrom.
Exactly.
Damien then Hellstrom, you've got Son of Satan.
Son of Satan. That's your byline. When your byline is the Son of Satan, when you have major motion pictures starring Nick Cage, who actually might be the Son of Satan, as the ghostwriter, whom, again, fallen angel that essentially works for the devil, and you see the devil, you've got characters in DC by the name of the Demon, who play a major role in the comic book.
About the Son of Satan is, one thing, he was a regular member of the Defenders during one of their periods.
Correct, he was.
Which, it's like Doctor Strange, the Hulk, Submariner. There was nobody in the Defenders that anyone could possibly want defending them. All of them were either complete outcasts, they were from other worlds or other belief systems. Nighthawk, who I think was briefly a member, or was like from a different dimension. Did we just run out of regular people? But the interesting thing with the Son of Satan is he used to appear in, what was it, like Marvel?
It's like Team Up or 2-in-1.
Well, actually, but his longest running run, because he first appeared in Ghost Rider, so you're half expecting that. And then later they let him move over to Marvel Spotlight.
That's it.
12 issues, 1973 to 1975. Okay. Marvel Spotlight featuring the Son of Satan.
And nobody has a problem with it.
Yeah. This is the 70s, and nobody... But if you put Marvel Spotlight featuring the Son of Satan, and that's all it said on the cover. It didn't say Damian Hellstrom, the Son of Satan.
Yeah.
It was just the Son of Satan.
This kid is from the Satan, and...
And he's got a pentagram permanently etched into his chest, like a brand.
He's got a pitchfork! He's got a pitchfork!
And he's got spit curls that look like horns, and a cape. The only thing he's missing
cape.
Is a bifurcated tail like Nightcrawler.
And Liberace's piano.
The first issue that he appears in Marvel Spotlight, or at least, you know, he first appeared in Ghost Rider, but his first Marvel Spotlight story, the cover shows him standing there yelling at presumably Satan off screen there. Says, Father, stand you back.
But nobody had a problem with that. If the cover would have been Marvel Spotlight starring super gay North Star, it would have gotten boycotted everywhere.
That's right. Even in the 70s, you couldn't have had, you know, Out of the Closet Man.
That's right. But, I mean, you've got guys like this. You've got cults. You've got all this stuff in comic books that nobody bats an eye about because nobody's actually doing the research into it to figure out what's going on. They just get the news blurb that's going to end up in the cycle and run with it, you know, and they'll let this go. We were discussing other kind of cultish situations. They'll just let it go.
Yeah.
Like Spawn. How successful was Spawn?
Oh, phenomenally successful. And
still is. Still is successful.
Like, you know, their kids were buying Spawn. They didn't think twice about it. And it's like, okay, this guy like works for the devil. Does that not bother you?
He's the devil's general. He's going to lead an army of demons against him.
But if your kids came and said, Mom, I want to get the latest issue of Son of Satan, you'd beat them with a Bible.
You would beat them with a Bible. This is true.
But you talk about the Son of Satan. The thing is that, you know, during the 70s, presumably we were all too stoned to care. I don't know. But the thing about it is, characters like Son of Satan and Spawn and other bastard children of the devil have one thing in common, is they tend to buck the satanic system.
Is there a satanic system?
There is. It's very, okay. It's not written down, and that's why it's very difficult.
Oh, it's the oral tradition.
Yeah, it's just pretty much off the cuff. It's like Fizbin, you know, it's just made up as you go along. Cather said it couldn't have been any crazier than equal rights for women, so that's probably how they snuck it in.
True.
Take that, Expo 75. So, basically, yeah, there's a dated joke for you.
Wow.
The thing about it is, the underpinning of characters like this that is lost on the surface of Son of Satan is that there's a message of hope that you can be the Son of Satan and yet deny Satan. Even if Satan has gone to the trouble of branding you permanently with a pentagram, which makes it really hard to go swimming in public pools.
It does.
That and the fact that every time you jump in, the water boils. But that's always a deterrent.
Womp, womp, womp.
But, you know, it really comes down to the idea of, if you're not so terrified of the surface, you might find a very positive something there. It's like, you know, there was so much outcry when Kevin Smith's Dogma came out that it took cooler heads to bother to look and say, no, this isn't saying screw you religion. There's a tremendously positive message about belief.
Exactly.
If you're not terrified to let somebody briefly shake your own belief system just a little, just rattle it just a tiny bit. He's not trying to change your attitudes. And then, of course, again, Catholicism, top shelf, high profile.
Oh, that's the thing. And I think that's another one of the overall themes of this story arc is, if used correctly, all the things that we're talking about can be used to tell a story and open one's, whether it's telling a story of acceptance or whether it's telling a story of belief or whether it's telling a story of redemption or whether it's telling a story of equality. But you have to let yourself get past your own stigma on what you're reading. You have to accept that what they're doing is they're telling a story to be able to do it. So let's talk for a second. We're coming to the point where, you know, I always say that we're low on time.
You just say that so eventually when we do get low on time, we're used to hearing it.
Right. I do want to talk a little bit about the mythological pantheon religions that exist in comic books.
And before we jump off into religions that nobody complains about, no matter what you say about them, because of the handful of practitioners of, you know, the acolytes of Zeus – are a pretty silent minority.
They're busy.
You know, I spoke earlier of the, you know, introducing an Islamic character into the DC universe and what a earth-shattering move that was to some people. And
yeah.
I want to go, and for those who may not have heard about this before, there was a documentary that I saw not too terribly long ago, like about a year or so at the most. And speaking in the subject of religion in comics, going more to religion as the comic. And there's two examples I want to cite. One is an almost forgotten graphic novel, X-Men God Loves, Man Kills, which explored an evangelist who was using his pulpit as a bully pulpit against mutants. Not only the mutants are out to destroy humanity, but also suggesting that mutants were against God.
Correct.
And it was the first and only time that really got some hardcore coverage, but it was sort of taken out of the Marvel Universe by making it a graphic novel in the days before the trade paperback was born.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an X-Men story, but it was sort of, you had to kind of go to the comic shop to find it. So they were really, you know, that was the closest to being edgy on religion. Elementals actually did a little something similar where they had an evangelist who was basically lured hundreds of people in and murdered all of them to create a handful of biblically themed superheroes.
Yeah.
But that was one of those points where Bill Willingham came back to the series long enough to get me interested and then immediately left. And those characters disappeared. That storyline disappeared for ages. And I never managed to figure out how that went on. But the other thing was, speaking of just religion as the comic, if you get a chance, look for a documentary called Wham Bam Islam. And it's a documentary about this gentleman in, I forget exactly, I think he's from United Arab Emirates, but I don't recall, so don't quote me on that.
Sure.
But name is Naif El Matawa, and
okay.
He was a big comic fan, and he was talking about in the documentary how comics are just huge, American comics are huge in the Islamic countries.
Okay.
But there's no comic characters that speak to Islamic people. And he thought, wouldn't it be great if we did a comic book where, you know, Islam was part of the comic? And he created this comic book called The 99. So if you get a chance, watch that, because number one, you will see the side of Islam that most people don't even imagine exists, and probably a closer approximation to what most Islamic devotees are like.
Yeah.
And you will also see an amazing struggle to try to inject religion into comics in a culture that doesn't really want you, certain factions of that culture don't want you reading comics, or certainly don't want religion being a part of it. But it was basically the 99, the core idea was he was trying to create a group of characters of 99 characters from all over the world whose powers represent the 99 aspects of God as illustrated in Islam.
Okay.
So that's one of those things where, you know, that got a little bit of press coverage here and there in this country and certainly a lot overseas, and then just sort of fell into obscurity. But I think it's definitely something people should look at, because it is a good example of how you can take your religious devotion and try to bring it into comic, and is it commercially viable? And really, for the most part, in this country, religion in comics is only commercially viable when you can make a big stir and
yeah.
get that same sort of thing that sex or other things
will spark.
That sort of pandering will get you for a brief flash in the pan. But yes, definitely there are religions that just really aren't heavily practiced.
Well, and there's one other thing I wanted to touch on, and I wanted to make sure of it before I ran my mouth on it. speaking of God Loves, Man Kills, the Purifiers were the name of the group.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, they were brought back
into
the storyline, and that's what I wanted to make sure of. After the Messiah Complex, which was when all of the mutants got wiped out and there were only 198 mutants left after that whole thing with House of M and all of that stuff, they were actually brought back in a big way, and they still exist in a big way right now in the comic book. They are they're one of the main forces against the X-Men as a mutants as a nation living on Utopia. So I wanted to make sure that got mentioned too. They aren't.
Absolutely, because I'm glad to hear that didn't just disappear so much in comics. I think some writers have great ideas that they don't bother to tell anybody else, and they're off the book, and that idea goes away forever.
Correct. And it's still, this one still exists. Yeah, they're between 2007 and 2008, they were a major character, and they're still out there causing trouble.
Good.
So
not good,
you know, that
causing trouble, mind you.
But they're being written as not as a pandering villain, but more as a storytelling villain, in the sense of what does it mean to be a mutant and what does it mean to be hated. You know, it used to be enough to say that the government hated you or the people hate you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've kind of moved past that point and into an acceptance of mutants as a culture, or as a, you know, almost a race in Marvel Comics, right? Because you've got Wolverine running around with the X-Men, or with the Avengers now. So, I mean, obviously he's accepted. Captain America, he'll stand up there with Captain America during a press conference. You're golden if you can do that.
Yeah, it's sort of like, how can you justify Spider-Man as a threat or menace in the Daily Bugle if he's with the Avengers?
Exactly. So, you had to find another tack for this. And their tack was the religious angle. You know, you've got these religious fundamentalist crazy, they're trying to literally kill the X-Men because they're an affront to God. And this has been a going storyline of what what does it mean? What does it mean to be a person? What does it mean to be a mutant? What does it mean? So they're really using it in the right, in the proper fashion, in the direct fashion.
Well, it's, again, a good example of using religion to drive the story, not simply to be the hey, look at me.
Exactly. Even though they do, you know, they do that. Oh, obviously.
Oh, I mean, there's...
Yeah. But it's a comic book. What do you expect? But, you know, they're at least doing the right things. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit, because we're coming down to the part of the show that we usually get a little goofy on.
That's
so
right.
let's get a little goofy with some polytheistic panther gods.
Yes, very good grammar.
Thank you. You know, there we have characters that not only in modern comic mythos, but that appear in a major way in, for instance, the Avengers movie.
Yes.
You know, who would have told you? You know, when I was coming up reading comic books, you know, 20 odd years ago, if you would have told me, hey, you know, you're going to go to the movie theater and one of the largest grossing movies of all time is going to feature a Norse mythological character, I would have said, you're high. Like, you are high.
You know,
I'm being forced to read this.
If you had told me that Thor was going to be as popular, number one, and as good, number two, as turned out to be, honestly thought Thor was the lame duck of the Marvel movie. And I applaud everyone involved for making me wrong.
Yeah, it was a great movie.
I've never been happier
to be wrong
as I was. As I loved Thor, and I did not expect to love Thor.
I've never liked, with the exception of one mythological character, okay? One character from Mythos that really stands out in my mind as a character that they've done exceptionally well almost the entire time he's been in existence. I've never really liked mythological characters up until Thor, the movie for Thor, and then Thor and the Avengers. I like that portrayal of Thor. But the character I'm speaking of course, is one Heracles, which
way to get Greek on us there.
That's right.
You weren't going to be Roman like Marvel.
I didn't go to community college for nothing.
I'm not going to call him Hercules.
Harkalhaz. That is my favorite depiction of any mythological character in comic books, period. No questions asked. Just awesome.
Well, Hercules was a character that a lot of writers had a lot of fun with, and I think he lent himself very well to a lot more fun than, you know, certain other characters might have.
Well, sure.
Certain other mythological characters. Yeah, a bit of an aside that's slightly out of context. It's out of context of the standpoint of where religion falls in comics. My biggest complaint with the polytheistic religion, you know, the dead religion characters, and apologies to anyone who still worships Kumarbi or Gilgamesh, or
which was another character, by the way. Do you remember Gilgamesh?
I have a Marvel
character.
Gilgamesh jumped into the Avengers after my time, but I'm actually more familiar with Gilgamesh's origins in Sumer than I am with Gilgamesh.
The Marvel Comics version. You're more associated with the actual version.
Yeah, I know more about the actual Gilgamesh than the one that Marvel had. But my,
you know, Gilgamesh, he's from
the
Bronx.
Comic books, gods and goddesses, was it suggested that humanity is incapable of conjuring up its own gods and goddesses. It took some extra dimensional being showing up and saying, "Oh yes, well, behold, worship me," and then going away when it was no longer convenient, though. I'm pretty sure that the combined Norse pantheon, the combined Greco-Roman pantheon, any of these pantheons, even the Egyptian gods that appeared in Marvel, any number of them could have stood easily against any encroachment of other religion. You know, I don't think the Crusaders would have stood a chance against the embodiment of gods and goddesses that, you know, the underpinnings of somebody else's religion that could actually come out and smack you upside the head.
But that's what happened during Fear itself.
Oh, okay.
Was
so they finally figured out after all these centuries that they, you know, we could have just imposed our will.
Sort of. Jormungandr, the world serpent. I'm sure I'm slaughtering the Norse pronunciation.
Well, luckily, our Norwegian audience remains rather small.
Came to Earth and, you know, was going to devour Earth, and so Thor, the Avengers, you know, did their thing, and then eventually Asgard had to step in.
Okay.
So I mean, that's the first time I think I've ever seen in a real honest fashion, you know, Asgard or Mount Olympus or any of the other home base of whatever pantheon it is actually come to Earth and defend it, other than being like, yeah, we're up here.
Yeah.
You know, which does beg the question, now that you've made it, why, if, you know, we've got all these religions, and this is probably going to be a little bit of a contentious statement, but I'm going to make it anyway.
Okay.
We've got all these religions out there. We've discussed, you know, Judaism, Catholicism, Christianity, Satanism,
Islam,
all these various religions that people worship within comic books. You literally have gods on the face of the earth, right?
I mean,
it's a literal thing. You can pay your nickel and go see Odin, essentially.
That's a good point, because, like, especially like with Wonder Woman, the very gods that her people have worshipped for centuries,
yeah,
routinely drop by and muck about in the world.
Correct.
And
Ares.
If you wanted to, you know, Hermes and Hephaestus could put on a vaudeville act.
But
I'm
saying
the old gods. Hurrah,
exactly. Why aren't people actually worshiping?
Yeah, it's like, it could be like Tony Randall in Circus of Dr. Lou.
But why aren't people worshiping these guys that are there?
Yeah.
They're gods. They're literally gods, you know, and walking about the earth.
I think
on a walkabout,
it
like Kane and Kung Fu.
It's like Fred Savage syndrome, to take a South Park sort of take on this, where they had the film festival in South Park and Fred Savage shows up, nobody cares.
Yeah.
And these are like the Fred Savage of godheads, you know, they show up and it's like, yeah, you know, we could maybe, I tell you what, Zeus, we'll book you. We've already got Thor. You know, we've already got I can't pronounce his name, that crazy monkey god from South America. So we got them all booked for the auto show.
For the auto show. So,
you know, I think that's literally, these are the gods that have been remanded to the auto show circuit.
But doesn't it beg the question that, you know, is it one of these situations like people claim that they need proof of something, right? Oh, I'm not going to believe it until I see proof of it. Now you've seen proof of it and they're like, yeah, not so much.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's
really
not the one
I was expecting. It turns out, you know, people didn't really like it that much.
I saw, you know, Ares at the Arby's getting a market fresh, and yeah, not so impressed.
He's really let himself go over the last 10,000 years.
Exactly.
Which, you know, I know for him is nothing, but, you know, still.
Hades took Cerberus to the obedience school again.
Yeah,
and
devoured all of the other students and their owners again.
It's you know, it begs the question, is what, how desensitized, and I want to do a show on this at some point, literally, how desensitized are you as a citizen of any of these worlds? You know, whether DC's world or Marvel's world, how desensitized have you become when you can see Thor and the Hulk and just, you know, walking down the street together, and then Nick Fury show up in a flying car, and a guy that was alive 100 years ago walking around, and, you know, Superman, aliens from other planets, just like Mole Man and his giant monsters came up through New York again. Man, let somebody else handle it.
At that point, you want to stand on like a meteorite out in front of Earth with a little cardboard sign that says, surprise me.
Well, there's
nothing left for you here.
Yeah, it's like the second Avengers movie coming out. You know, is it, instead of everybody screaming and running in terror, is it just going to be like, meh, you know, I liked it the first time. You know, this is...
I think what we need to see in superhero movies, though, you bring up an odd point that's... has nothing at all to do with this issue. But I think what you need to see in superhero movies is not people running away, but to make it more realistic, have half the people running and half the people pulling out their damn phones and iPads.
Correct.
And
yeah.
Shit and filming it.
And then that tenth of the people that are late for a meeting.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I can't believe I can't catch a taxi in this town. As alien spaceship crashing behind them. Exactly.
I mean, he's busily like sending a text of the guy's number. He's like, I'm going to so complain. And, you know, that's the guy who the meteor does not fall on.
Now that we've kind of diverged, and not that it doesn't have anything to do with it, it sort of does, because superheroes become their own pantheon. You know, they become their own, and DC and Justice League did a pretty good job of this. They become their own gods to the people in their universe. You know, you've got Superman. Superman is essentially a god amongst men.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
when Teen Titans was relaunched, one of the later story arcs was about when Superboy gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
This cult building up around the myths and legends of Superboy, and these, you know, people trying to study the mysteries of Krypton. And,
exactly.
You know, it's just like the Yahoos who go out and find some public art sculpture and worship it because they think they're Elfie and Jojo from Munchkin Land or something.
But yeah, so I mean, and that's the thing. These are fun questions to answer. Again, religion is a very serious topic. Religion has been the result of more wars.
Yes.
On the face of this earth, not their earths, but this earth, it was the result of essentially the forming of a country. It's the result of, it's the catalyst that led me to be able to sit here and be able to do a podcast. Essentially, you know, there's more to it than that, but.
Yeah, I think the founding fathers would have just hung themselves if they had any idea what the, you know, for this we sacrificed.
For this. So they are, it is the religion of all the topics that we've talked about. I honestly believe that religion is one of the most serious. Yet in comic books, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, that is the most interesting dichotomy to me, is all these other things in comic books are taken so seriously by the talking heads in the media or people in the outside world that want to have these conversations or one-sided conversations. And religion is left generally alone.
And you have to wonder, is it too scary a topic to touch?
It could be.
I mean, it seems strange that it's less frightening to risk a homosexual character than it is to risk a character suddenly saying, you know, that was, say, raised Catholic, because that's the go-to religion, suddenly declaring that they're abandoning Catholicism to worship Thor and Odin.
I would read that book.
Something that you ought to be exploring in these comics is,
exactly,
do you have people suddenly confronted with the proof of a one-time God saying, well, maybe I've had it wrong all this time? And it does hearken to the line in Watchmen in some of the supplemental material where it has the book by Dr. Glass about superpowers and the superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
Where he mentions that he was misquoted. They changed it to a different character in the movie, of course, but where he was misquoted when he was quoted as saying the Superman exists. He said he, in fact, said that God exists and he's American, and goes on to say that if that leaves you with a profound sense of religious dread, that simply means you're still sane.
With Dr. Manhattan?
Huh?
Speaking of Dr. Manhattan.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, speaking in the context of Dr. Manhattan being the his arrival into their world. And the thing about it is, because he's the only character in Watchmen with legitimately otherworldly impossible powers, he does serve to illustrate what does it do to you,
yeah,
when suddenly you're confronted in a world where the mysteries of religion are now just pretty much handed to you in a four-color explosion.
Correct. When the mysteries of religion walk down the street next to you.
And
what does that mean?
What does that do to you if you're Savage Dragon and you actually get to see God face to face, which I always thought in the Bible, if you saw God's face, you died.
Well, unless you're Savage Dragon, because apparently you can't die.
He is tougher than the... Plus, he was invited there to watch God kick the devil's ass, which I would argue...
Seems like,
know,
that would be a hell of a ticket to get.
Yeah, that makes compelling visuals, but at the end of the day, if God created the devil along with all the other angels, wouldn't he be able to kick his ass at will anyway? I mean,
pretty
really?
Much, yeah, right? All right, guys, we're gonna wrap this up.
Yeah,
I hope that
my parting shot is to recommend that you read Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing.
Sure, okay.
During which time he goes to the afterlife to find his bride, to rescue her soul.
Okay.
And one of the most fascinating things, this was like my two favorite things to cite where people really underscore the way religion ought to be viewed by everyone. Where dogma, where Rufus says it's not what you believe, it's that you believe.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the issues of Swamp Thing, where when he arrives in the afterlife, there's a scene where it describes this entire plane has crashed. So in the afterlife, the plane actually physically, symbolically,
yeah,
is landing. And it shows all the people looking out on board the plane, looking out the windows. And certain ones of them, you know, to help illustrate, like one of the people on the plane is wearing a turban. Just to kind of hint that what you ought to be imparted anyway is that they're all of different religions and different beliefs and races, creeds, etc. And they're all looking out the window, seeing exactly what they expect to see.
Whatever their religion
exactly
has told them.
What Moore was suggesting is, it's all the same destination.
Correct. So what I hope that we've done here is give you a little bit of information, and hopefully in an episode like this, I hope to give you more questions than answers, and hope that you'll go out, search out some of this, look around, see what it is, visit the Lazarus Pit, which I didn't even talk about.
Yeah.
But stay tuned for next episode. Next issue will be the kind of potpourri, the catch-all final episode of this issue of this arc, followed by one that we are most excited about
yes,
doing,
indeed,
which is, so we're going to break up the seriousness of these issues with a couple fun ones. And issue six is going to be, the worst comic book toys, which, is going to be really enjoyable.
Yeah, I think we're going to really ply the dark depths of the comic book toy world.
I'm
going to
make eBay scream in submission.
That's right. But next week, we're going to be discussing social issues in comics. That's our potpourri. Mm-hmm.
That's our potpourri is social issues in comics.
Because there's so many things that just don't warrant a show by themselves, but definitely correct. Require some attention.
Yes, absolutely. It does end our first and probably most contentious arc. That we're going to do. So stay tuned. Keep listening. If you have any questions, if you have any suggestions, if you'd like to tell us that we suck or that we're great, feel free to hit up where Cole.
Duh. I'm sorry. Where
blank.
Edit point.
You can hit up HK Comic Show on Twitter. We have a page on Facebook now, which is HK Comic Show. And Cole, where can we get emails?
Cole Universe on Facebook as well.
Exactly.
And of course, if you would like to write us with questions, comments, complaints, do you want to rattle our cage or tell us how contentious or lacking thereof we might have been, write to JediColeUniverse@yahoo.com. I swear to God, that address is now working.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
That's right. We now have the kinks out of that I'm actually starting to check it as well, so it'll remain active. You can also find Andrew and I at various intervals and in various capacities over at the United States of Geekdom, www.unitedstatesofgeekdom.com.
Correct.
And of course,
I'd like to say again, as we're wrapping up, just a huge heartfelt thank you to Cole, who's not only my co-host but producer and allows me a place to do this show, which is something I've wanted to do for a long time. And so thank you for that. I really do appreciate it. You are definitely the co-host of my heart.
And I also want to give a very special thank you to our friend Stuart Balk in Australia, who is goodly enough to make us sound even better than my editor makes us sound.
Oh, yeah. Technical genius, not to mention master of his own brand of humor that makes us laugh without fail every single time.
So one of these days we'll have to do an issue called I Don't Know Anything About Comics.
I really want to do that. We're going to do
Stu
that.
Stu is our special guest because he doesn't, yet he is learning more and more and more than he ever would have imagined.
And he wants to learn, sort of.
Yeah. So.
I think that's the only way I can really put that. He wants to be sort of knowledgeable.
But he definitely does not want to be us.
And thank you, Catherine, for letting us use Cole. Appreciate that. And for being very insightful. And occasionally
calling me out of the room to say, hey, you didn't think of this.
Exactly.
Because while Catherine does not have the lengthy background in comics that I have, the comics she read, those that she has read, stick with her. And she'll remember stuff that completely slips my mind while I'm trying to cast about for things.
You know, they say behind every man is a good woman. Behind this podcast, there's Catherine. So thank you for that. We do appreciate it.
As the editors often say at the end of a story, to be continued.
To be continued. Also, traditional. Traditionally, I always say buy, read, and enjoy comics. But think about them too, guys. They're awesome, fun reads. And I think Cole and I both agree that they're one of the best ways you can tell a story out there. So until next week, fearless listeners, this is Hey Kids Comics.